June 22nd, 2012. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, broadcasting from my office in the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today for what I think will be a very exciting program. To see the guest lineup for Studio A and B, please click on the word schedule in the RBN banner at the top of the page, republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest schedule for this program, please visit the radio schedule page at spingola.com. You may see a list of the guests together with links to their websites and other interesting sites. Please feel free to join my email list to receive a weekly announcement of the scheduled guest and any other special notifications. I have linked it to today's date. We will not be taking calls today. For questions or comments during today's program, please email spingola1 at yahoo.com. I cannot promise to answer them all, but only as time permits. On Wednesday, I quoted from Dr. Thomas Dalton's book. He wrote, and I quote, "As with any historical event, it is important to get the facts straight and to develop consistent and coherent views about what happened. To understand what did or did not happen is important for understanding the world of the 20th century and, by extension, the world of today." Further, he said, if we can be misled or fooled or deceived or lied to about the Holocaust, what other events might we be misled about? The same social forces that could give rise to and sustain a deficient Holocaust story could produce countless other stories that might be exaggerated, embellished, distorted, or falsified. Unquote. The foundation of the Holocaust is based on three claims. Number one, the Nazis killed 6 million Jews, a claim that they made during and after World War I, but it didn't stick. Number two, they used homicidal gas chambers and other various methods. Number three, the Nazis had a devised, systematic plan to rid Europe of its Jews by building extermination camps. People claim that they used six camps built in 1941, 42 for extermination. These were Auschwitz, Majdanek, Chelmno, Sobibor, Treblinka, and Belzec. Today, my guests are going to debate particular issues relative to the Holocaust, specifically the gas chambers and other extermination methods that the Germans allegedly used. Evidence falls into four categories. They are, number one, eyewitness accounts from surviving victims. Number two, statements of confession or innocence from the alleged perpetrators. Number three, documentation relating to the crime, including photographs. And number four, material evidence, bodies, murder weapons, physical structures, etc. These four categories can be split in half. The first two are subjective. The last two are more objective. My guests today are Friedrich Paul Berg, a revisionist, and Roberto Muhlenkamp, who embraces the traditional orthodox view of the Holocaust. Friedrich's website is nazigassings.com. Roberto's website is holocaustcontroversies.blogspot.com. Roberto co-wrote a book, Belzec, Sobibor, Treblinka, Holocaust Denial, and Operation Reinhardt, a critique of the falsehoods of Montaigne, Graf, and Cues, a Holocaust Controversies white paper. Now, that came out in December of 2011. I have linked it on today's date. All of the links are right there, so just feel free to follow those. Gentlemen, please refrain from name-calling during this debate. Please focus on the issues rather on each other's character. A sure sign that one's argument is inadequate is the use of character assassination against his or her opponent. All righty, we're going to a break. We'll be right back.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dry guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dry guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dry guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Chlorine, fluoride, pathogens, and more are in the water you drink day to day. Do you want the ability to remove and reduce those harmful things in the water you drink? You can. How? With a Berkey water filter. A complete standalone gravity filter system that requires no electricity and no plumbing. Use for emergencies or for every day. Berkey systems come in 7 different sizes. Where can you get one? From GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com. With the purchase of each system, you get 50% off accessories, such as fluoride filters, water level spigot, and sport bottles. Plus, free shipping on all orders over $25. For a limited time, get 5% off all ceramic systems when you use coupon code RBN. Call GetBerkey at 855-GetBerkey. That's 855-438-2375. Or visit GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plans, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info. Or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256. Or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
During this segment, each guest will have 4 minutes to introduce his thesis and give his professional background. Roberto will go first. I will let each participant know when the time is up. Thereafter, when we come back from each break, I will quickly announce who is to speak and how much time they will have. I want to give each participant equal time. Okay, Roberto, go.
Okay. Hello, Diana.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me to your show. Professional background, I'm a contract manager. I'm a lawyer by training, and I work with a company here in Portugal as contract manager. So these activities regarding, for instance, the Holocaust, the controversies block, are sort of a hobby to me. Okay. I accept what I think all serious historians accept, and what all criminal justice authorities who have investigated the subject accept, what all governments in the world accept, which is that the government of Nazi Germany during World War II endeavored to exterminate the Jewish population of Europe and succeeded to the extent of killing somewhere between 5 and 6 million Jews. 6 million is probably a bit too high. 5 million is probably a bit too low. Correct number is probably somewhere in between. Okay? Why is this accepted? Is this an accepted historical record? Yes? Why? It is an accepted historical record simply because all known evidence points to this phenomenon. Yes, all known evidence, be it documents, be it eyewitness testimonies, be it demographic data, yeah, be it investigations of physical evidence, for instance, the mass graves at Belzec, at Sobibor and Treblinka, also the mass graves in the occupied territories of the Soviet Union, which are which were investigated by the Soviets during World War II and are now being reinvestigated by a French priest, Father Patrick Desbois. So all the evidence points to the fact that the Nazis really reduced the population of the Jewish population of Europe from about 9.6 million, which it was in 1939, to something like 3.5 million or something like that, which it was in 1945, 1946. Yeah, the difference is something around 5.5 million, something in the order of that, and 5 to 5.1 million. And this deficit, yes, cannot be explained by emigration. This deficit cannot be explained by the people having survived and returned to their homes, because post-war demographic data don't bear that out. No, neither immigration data from countries which they were, where they could have gone to, nor the data from the countries where they originally came from. Yes. So, additionally, we have evidence, plenty of evidence, documentary evidence, some of it made by the killers itself, especially regarding mass shootings in the occupied territories of the Soviet Union, yeah, that there really was a program to wipe out the Jews because they were Jews. And we have evidence that we have evidence from high-ranking officials of the Nazi government, which shows that there really was a program to wipe out the Jews of Europe. Mm-hmm. Against this, what evidence is there that the Holocaust did not happen, that Jews were not exterminated, that Jews who were deported to Belzec, to Sobibor, to Treblinka, yeah, were then taken further onwards to places in the occupied territories of the Soviet Union, and that there they, they survived and then came back to their countries, or...
Okay, Roberto.
There's none.
Now it is time for Friedrich.
Yeah.
Okay, Diana, it's nice to talk to you, and it's nice to hear you also, Mr. Muhlenkamp. We've debated these subjects for many, many years. And you are a very tenacious and determined defender of the Holocaust hoax. No one was killed in gas chambers by the Nazis. All of those gas chamber claims are rubbish, and you should know that by now. You've been trying to promote this nonsense for years, and you have failed consistently. The focus of my talk here today will be on these gas chamber claims. The Holocaust scholars, all of them, including Mr. Muhlenkamp, are blinded with blinders and ignore enormous bulk evidence that's available that shows that the entire German civilian economy relied enormously on the use of poison gas to drive the civilian economy throughout the war. And this gas technology is totally ignored by you in your essays. It's totally ignored by some of the leading scholars in Germany today, who at least today admit that diesel engines were not likely as a source of carbon monoxide for mass murder in places like Treblinka, Belzec, and Sobibor. Even you, Mr. Muhlenkamp, seem willing to admit that the diesel gas chamber story is false. Instead, you claim, and others are now claiming also, they are revising their story, in effect, claiming now that it was gasoline engines instead. All of those claims are rubbish, because the Germans had something much better as a source of carbon monoxide. During World War II, Germany was desperately short of liquid fuels, which it needed to drive military equipment, including aircraft of every sort, tanks, ships, and so forth. And they tried already at the very beginning of the war to reserve as much liquid fuel for those purposes and to switch over civilian consumption to an alternative fuel made by burning wood and wood scraps and twigs and waste material of every sort to make carbon monoxide, which could then be burned in either diesel engines or gasoline-type engines. And in the process, they conserve these precious liquid fuels for the military. Now, that technology is clearly explained in the technical literature from World War II, and it is evidence that you and people like you totally ignore. And the same applies to Mr. Achim Trunk, who is a more recent scholar who claims or pretended to have examined this subject and who in fact didn't do his homework at all. So I'll say a few more words in the time that is left. This producer gas, which is the name in English, which was called Holzgas or generator gas in German, was used to propel more than 500,000 motor vehicles in German-occupied Europe throughout the war. And the fuel was dirt cheap. You could be almost anywhere in Poland, and if you ran out of fuel for your producer gas-driven truck, you go into the woods, look for some twigs and branches, break them up into small pieces, put them into your producer gas generator, and you can get back on the road and back in business. This gas was also extremely toxic, and if anybody had wanted to kill people with carbon monoxide, that would have been the gas to use. It contained 18 to 35% carbon monoxide. In other words, it was extremely deadly. For the Germans to have used diesel exhaust or gasoline engine exhaust as a source of carbon monoxide when they had Holzgas available is sheer lunacy. And people like you should be thoroughly ashamed of yourself for not having the good sense to realize that. I've been trying to make people aware of this technology for 30 years, and only gradually are more and more people coming to appreciate that.
Okay, can I answer now?
I don't know how the time is.
What's the program? Deanna?
Deanna, are you still there?
I'm sorry, I muted myself. So I wouldn't, okay. Friedrich, what is your professional background?
I'm an engineer by education. I graduated in 1965 from Columbia University's School of Mines. I worked as a professional engineer for many years. I even worked on weapons of mass destruction, if that's of any interest to anyone.
Okay.
Yes, for among other things.
Great. Okay, we are going to a break in about another minute, but when we come back, Roberto, you will have 3 minutes to respond to what Friedrich just said, and then Friedrich will have 3 minutes after you get done. So in just momentarily, we will go to a break, and do remember to be kind to, well, to be kind to each other. Doesn't that sound like something coming from a woman? Try and get along. Okay. We will go to a break. We will be back in 3 minutes. And Roberto, you will take 3 minutes when we come back from the break. Okay?
Yep.
All righty. Be right back.
As business becomes more difficult, control of cash and the ability to borrow becomes critical. Working capital cash is your greatest insurance and guarantee of financial stability in these uncertain times. Equipment leasing allows you to obtain the income-producing equipment that your business needs and pay for it with tax-free, ever-devaluing dollars. Money that you've already earned and paid taxes on should be sparingly used. That is your reserve capital, safety net. We are also able to buy and lease back equipment that you already own and have depreciated, thereby making more cash available for your present-day needs. For a complete, comprehensive explanation as to how this financial truth will benefit your business future, call Bob New Incorporated at 888-639-2621. 888-639-2621. Keep your working capital cash reserves and borrowing capability. 888-639-2621.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you have the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Seed Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offerer can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Welcome back. Our guests today are Friedrich Paul Berg and Roberto Muhlenkamp. They're debating certain aspects of the Holocaust. Okay, Roberto, you have 3 minutes.
Okay. First, I would like to note that in his opening speech, what Mr. Berg did essentially was what you, Diana, said you should not do, which is to make ad hominem attacks, attack his opponent's character as opposed to his opponent's arguments. He has basically insinuated or expressed or expressly stated that I argue in bad faith, yes, that I know better, yes. And I don't know if Mr. Berg wants to be taken seriously if he argues in this manner, okay? I mean, it's not my problem, it's his problem. Okay. I would also like to note that he has not addressed any of my arguments which I presented for why I believe in the established historical record. For instance, he has not addressed the fact that really that all known evidence points to mass murder, no evidence points to an alternative scenario. For the hoax, which he speaks about, he likes to speak about hoax, there is no evidence whatsoever. Who performed the hoax? How did they do it? Yeah. Well, would it even have been possible to do that? There is nothing. Zero. Okay? The only argument, and the argument that Mr. Berg presents in defense of his theory, I would call it really, it's laughable. It's a laughable argument. Yes? What Mr. Berg is basically saying is that Germans did not have gas chambers where they killed people with engine exhaust because they could have killed people with, producer gas exhaust. Yeah? And that's a ridiculous argument. I'm very sorry, that's a ridiculous argument. If they could have done it better, yes, then they didn't choose they happened to not to choose the best possible method. No? But there is, it's not always who murderers, even organized murderers, choose the best possible method. Besides, it is very questionable whether producer gas would have been the best and the most practical method. Mr. Berg, in a Usenet discussion, once pointed out that producer gas, yes, was, he said, the generators, the producer gas generators, were extremely dangerous. Everyone had to know that because gas leaks were not only toxic, but also highly explosive. When the engines were shut off, the generators would keep on generating until the internal fire could be extinguished. And then he says, can anyone really believe? And so on and so on. I mean, what I read here is that the Nazis would have had to be very, very cautious in using these producer gas generators or vehicles.
Okay, Roberto, time's up.
Yeah.
Friedrich.
Okay. All right. Do you want me to go ahead? Well,
yes.
For Mr. Muhlenkamp, this is questionable, and for him, that's already a reason to reject it completely. What really is most questionable is the evidence that he and others have given over the years for gassings, either with diesel exhaust or gasoline engine exhaust. All of those claims are thoroughly contradictory. You can only pick a little bit here from this piece of testimony and that piece of testimony, and then perhaps you can get something approaching even a remotely consistent idea as to how the gas chambers at Axion Reinhardt camp supposedly worked. The real explanation for all of those testimonies is that the people lied. That's the most logical explanation, and it's fairly clear that in every one of those pieces of testimony, these people lied. The most blatant liar was Kurt Gerstein, a former member of the SS, or an SS lieutenant, who actually claimed that the corpses after gassing were blue and wet with sweat and urine. Mr. Muhlenkamp should know perfectly well by now that corpses of carbon monoxide gasings or carbon monoxide gas are not blue at all. They are bright cherry red. And anyone who had seen corpses of people killed with carbon monoxide would have known that. He would have noticed huge piles of red-colored corpses. And yet none of the so-called self-described eyewitnesses at any of the camps ever claimed to have seen bright cherry red or any other kind of red corpses. In other words, these people have lied again and again. They've been encouraged to lie by the Polish courts and the prosecutors in various trials. That is where the hoax came from. It came from people who were fanatics and determined to destroy any vestige of Nazi Germany for all kinds of reasons. Now, he claims the story about gassing with producer gas is laughable. It's not laughable. You just don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Muhlenkamp. The dangers with producer gas are dealt with all the time. Every truck driver who ever drove one of these vehicles dealt with it by being careful. People are careful when they use gasoline in their cars. They don't smoke on top of the gas tank or in the vicinity of the tank when they're filling it with fuel. Those are dangers that we face all the time with all kinds of dangerous materials, and producer gas was just one of those gases that one dealt with. And in a gas chamber, one could have simply run the showers.
Just okay, Friedrich, we've got to go to a break. Your 3 minutes are up. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Herbal Healer Academy's new summer specials. Our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Organic liquid iodine, liquid cal, Meg, vitamin D, CoQ10 with Hawthorne, Colon Enhancer, Super 2, Natural Laxative, our exceptional product, Connexin, Memory Power, and Super Male and Femplex. All on sale for the summer at HerbalHealer.com. Also, 10% off on the HHA Survival Course. This is an important time to have this information. Might save your life. Nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education. HerbalHealer.com. Free online newsletter. Quality natural medicine supplier since 1988. We ship the same day you place your order. Free 128-page catalog with your first order. Go to HerbalHealer.com today. HerbalHealer.com.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of micro plant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, Microplant Powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Welcome back. My guests today are Friedrich Paul Berg and Roberto Muhlenkamp. And Roberto, you now have 8 minutes.
8 minutes, okay. I'll ignore the atomic attacks of Mr. Berg, okay? He should know better about what that does to his credibility. What Mr. Berg claims that all witnesses who described homicidal gassings, or the aftermath of homicidal gassings, they lied, and that they lied because they were encouraged to lie by fanatics who interrogated them. So Mr. Berg is constructing here a conspiracy theory which sees fanatics in Poland and fanatics in the Soviet Union and fanatics in the United States and fanatics in France and wherever witnesses were interrogated, including the German Federal Republic, yeah, whose criminal justice authorities did most of the interrogations of witnesses. They were all fanatics who wanted to destroy Nazi Germany. They were all acting in bad faith. They were all inducing the witnesses into telling stories. Yeah? The evidence that Mr. Berg has for this is zero. Zero. This is a complete fantasy. Yeah? And it is also completely inconceivable that all these fanatical entities, whatever, which are supposed to create the hoax, could have coordinated with each other, yeah, to the extent of making all the witnesses tell more or less the same story with some differences. That's completely impossible, especially if you think that most of the investigations were done in the time of the Cold War, when Poles and Soviets on the one hand and Americans and Germans on the other hand were not exactly talking to each other. The Soviets said they had their archives closed, so there was really not much cooperation, and there was not even if they had been these fanatical, they would not They would not have had the possibility to coordinate the efforts in influencing witnesses. Yes, and why would the witnesses have let themselves be influenced? That's another question. Why didn't they tell the truth? What was keeping them from telling the truth? I would like Mr. Berg to answer that. Regarding technical arguments, of course, Mr. Berg says the risks of using producer gas could have been handled. I'm sure they could have been handled. But why bother? Why bother when Germany, at the time these operations were carried out, had plenty of gasoline at its disposal? For instance, I have data here that in June 1942 alone, 6 million liters of gasoline were delivered to the general government. Yes? At this time, Germany had the Romanian oil fields at its disposal. Yes? And they were also counting on getting the oil fields at Baku in the Soviet Union. They had lots of gasoline. Yes? They had lots of gasoline to spend. And gasoline was something that required no extra precautions. Yes? And one other thing. For every producer gas truck that was taken out of the line, so another truck would have had to be put in the line. And I assume that a truck that runs all day long over Russian streets, which are very bad, spends a lot more gasoline, yes, than is spent running a gasoline engine in idle mode to gas people. Okay, so it wouldn't have been exactly a saving of gasoline, apart from the fact that the Germans had enough gasoline at that time. Even in 1945, when they burned the corpses at Dresden, after bombing attack, they used 68,000 liters, by my calculations, of gasoline. And that was a time when gasoline was scarce, but not in 1942. So there was really no reason to use a system which, if not carefully used, was dangerous, when you could use a system which required no special precautions, no reason. And if there had been a reason, this would only mean that the Nazis were not the most practical people. So what? So what? Yeah? Murderers, as I said, don't always apply the most practical methods. As to Mr. Gerstein said the corpses were blue. Yes, Mr. Gerstein was a fantasy porn witness. Mr. Gerstein is a witness that can only be used to the extent that his testimony is corroborated by more objective witnesses. And more objective witnesses didn't say the corpses were blue. They said that the corpses had a bluish tinge. Yeah, about the face, a bluish tinge, a bluish puffiness that was Dr. Fallenstiel, or they said that some of the victims had were blue at their nose tips and at their lips. That was an assessment by the name of Karl Alfred Schluck. Yeah, there was a Mr. Reda who noticed no particular discoloration, and he said the corpses looked sort of like they were alive, suggesting that they had a healthy look. Yeah, and there was a Mr. Wernick, yeah? Yes, these are the ones I remember right now, who described the corpses. So we have a handful of testimonies describing the corpses, the expectation that they would not necessarily have noticed a particular discoloration of the corpses is lowered, against lowered by the smallness of this database. What Mr. Beck says about the cherry red discoloration of carbon monoxide poisoning victims is influenced by several factors, which Mr. Berg knows about. We've talked about it a lot. He even has an essay from me on his website. Yes. First of all, did the victims die of carbon monoxide poisoning, or did they suffocate? That's the one thing. The second thing is, victims mostly came from ghettos in Poland, especially at Belzec, where we have these descriptions of Fallenstiel and Schluck from. They came from ghettos in Poland, which were subject to severe malnutrition. Severe malnutrition creates anemia, creates hemodilution, creates respiratory problems. There are medical sources about that. Yeah? And all these may have led, according to medical literature which we have presented, may have led to the cherry red color not being present because there was too little hemoglobin in these people's blood to display the color, or because they had a compromised ability to oxygenate. The term comes from an article by Risser et al., which Berg has quoted and which we are glad that he quoted it. Okay. Last but not least, even assuming that the victims that died of carbon monoxide poisoning had a turned cherry red, the question is when was that color present? And when was that color so prominent that it would have been noticed not only by a doctor who did a careful examination of the corpse, but by any casual witness? A casual witness would say, who was so shocked at what he was seeing, corpses falling out of the gas chambers and so on, might not have been too interested in what color they were. Okay? What I have seen of sources describing carbon monoxide poisoning and the cherry red coloration refer to fatal cases of carbon monoxide poisoning, and the color is usually described as showing in the liver of the corpse. The liver is liver mortis. That is a condition that starts to develop some half an hour or something like that, 15 to 30 minutes after death, but a small patches or something like that, which can only be detected by a doctor. And for the corpses to become really cherry red or bright red, it takes hours.
Okay. Roberto, your time is up.
Yeah.
Friedrich, you have eight minutes.
Okay, first place, what Mr. Muhlenkamp claims about the abundance of gasoline in German-occupied Europe is pure rubbish. Obviously, he has no idea what he's talking about. He should read the German literature, especially the German automotive literature. Already from the very beginning of the war, there were major efforts made to convert as much of the economy over to this alternative fuel in order to conserve liquid fuels for the military and for the war, which was likely to be a very long war. Already in 1942, there was a decree from Reich Minister Speer on September 22nd of 1942, acting in his capacity as plenipotentiary for armament production, ordered the conversion of all medium and heavy motor vehicles, including buses, in all German-occupied regions to producer gas generators. That was an indication of the shortage of gasoline and liquid diesel fuel. A year later, in September of 1943, Speer issued an additional order requiring that all motor vehicles, without any exceptions, big, small, private cars, be converted to this producer gas technology. So Mr. Muhlenkamp's insistence that there was an abundance of gasoline is absolutely false. It is rubbish. You ought to be ashamed of yourself, Mr. Muhlenkamp. Now, as far as the color of corpses, looking at my notes here, he claims that only doctors could recognize the difference. Rubbish, Mr. Muhlenkamp. From you, I actually found a beautiful picture of a corpse of a person who died from carbon monoxide poisoning. It was a very good quality photograph, and in fact, I incorporated that picture in the logo for my website. There are not too many websites, as far as I know, that have actual pictures of dead bodies because it's not the most pleasant kind of subject, but I do, and that's all the more reason for you to go back to my website and read the material much more carefully and read it thoroughly. And the same applies to all the listeners. The website is www.nazigassings.com. Now, the idea that none of the witnesses ever talked about any redness of the corpses is stunning. This shows a huge, huge error, a consistent error in all of these so-called eyewitness statements, because even if some of the corpses didn't turn bright cherry red after half an hour, an awful lot of them did. And you can't get away from that by pretending that they were all anemic or something like that. I hope you stick to that anemic argument, and I hope you can persuade other Holocaust scholars to embrace it as well, because it is so silly. It is so weak. The vast majority of corpses killed with carbon monoxide would have turned bright cherry red. And according to the stories that were given, the bodies were piled up afterwards in pits or wherever. The story varies from one so-called witness to the next, and everybody in the vicinity would have seen these things. They didn't necessarily have to be a witness at the actual gassing. They would have seen these piles of corpses probably for long, long distances. Now, let's see what else I can point out here. The idea that they were all anemic is ridiculous. Certainly, many were anemic. Many ordinary people outside of the Jewish community were anemic. But many Jews were quite healthy. And when one looks at pictures from the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising in May of 1943, one can see lots and lots of people who are quite healthy. They look quite normal. They're in many cases quite well-dressed. Their hair is well combed and cared for. There is no reason to believe from those pictures, which everyone can find on the internet just by looking up Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, you look at those pictures and you can clearly see those people look very, very normal. Even at the very end of the war in Bergen-Belsen, which was a terrible place at that time because of the disease that was rampant there, the typhus brought on largely by the attacks of the Allies, one could see in the camp, among the Jews, fat Jews. The most prominent example was Ada Bimko. Ada Bimko, a very famous person. She was a prominent witness against many of the German defendants, and she was fat. How did she get fat? Well, the standard story is that she was a good organizer. She was a black marketeer. That's what was going on in the Warsaw Ghetto and in other ghettos. The Jews were, in some cases, at least in many cases, I think, making lots of money trading in everything. The Warsaw Ghetto was a wonderful black market where you could buy weapons and food and ammunition, clothing, just about anything. And it was certainly a mixed bag as far as the health of the people. Some were very sick, for sure, but some people were very sick outside of the camps as well. Anyway, once again, you failed with your false arguments, I think, to make any kind of a case for your Holocaust hoax.
Is that it?
That's it, yeah.
Okay, do you want to address, Friedrich, do you want to address the gas chambers? You do have three more minutes, or two more minutes, the gas chambers themselves, starvation?
Well, the gas chambers, let's talk about the Zyklon B gas chambers. I have a question that I posted on my website, which everyone can read and Mr. Muhlenkamp can think about. In America, they use cyanide gas to execute prisoners, and it's far from a quick, easy process. Some people enter the gas chamber, and they do what they're told or coached into doing, which is to take a big, deep breath of cyanide gas at the signal from the warden outside the window of the gas chamber. And those people will die very quickly if they take a big, deep breath at the right moment, and within 5 minutes, they'll probably be dead. But most prisoners, it seems, don't cooperate in their own execution. They die slowly. The last gas chamber execution in the United States with cyanide took 18 minutes. It was a fiasco. It was a botched execution. And one of the reasons why gas chambers are generally not used in the United States is because the evidence leaked out over many years, including as a result of court cases, that cyanide gassings were not quick and easy at all. Now, suppose if instead of using the pot or barrel method to generate cyanide gas quickly, they had simply dumped crystals or Zyklon B granules into these homicidal or execution gas chambers. How long does one think the executions would have dragged on? The fact is they would have taken a very, very long time. The exact amount of time is hard to say with any certainty, but it certainly would have been a very long process, probably hours, to kill off any number of prisoners in these execution gas chambers, even here in the United States, with just Zyklon B. Zyklon B releases cyanide gas slowly. slowly. That's the key word. And it was made that way. It's a substance that was designed to release cyanide slowly so that it could be handled safely by the various pesticide specialists who distributed these granules in various nooks and crannies of a barracks or a ship hold or in any number of places.
Okay, we've got to cut to a break. We will be right back. When we come back, Roberto, you will have 2 minutes.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
If you're the mother of a child with behavior problems, I'd like to talk to you. My name is Janet Lehman. I'm a behavioral therapist and a mom. I know what it's like when the child you love becomes a defiant, out-of-control child who disrespects you. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the program that tens of thousands of moms are now using to turn around their child's behavior. If you've heard about the Total Transformation and wondered if it will work for you, now you can try it for free. I'm willing to give away 1,000 programs today for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free. I know the Total Transformation works because I used these techniques with my own son and with troubled kids for over 30 years. Let me prove to you that it works by giving you the program for free.
Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcasts, as well as a contest corner where we'll raffle different prizes to our listeners. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Switch just a little bit. Roberto, you have about 4 minutes, and I would like you to address the how the Nazis got rid of 5 to 6 million bodies. And then when we come back from the break, on the other side of the hour, we'll give some time to Fritz. Okay, go ahead.
Wait a minute. Am I not supposed to answer to what Mr. Berg said?
Well, I would like you to answer, how did the Nazis get rid of 5 to 6 million bodies?
Oh, that's easy. 56 million people die in the world every day. Not every day, but every year. Yes? And the bodies are somehow riddled. 5 to 6 million bodies, big deal. I mean, there were about 30 million dead in Europe, yeah, including the Jews, and their bodies were somehow disposed of. The bodies were disposed of in mass graves, yeah, and the bodies were disposed of by burning them. Many bodies are still in mass graves in the occupied territories of the Soviet Union. Many bodies are still in mass graves in the capitals where they starve to death. Yeah. Other bodies, namely at the camps, were mostly cremated, and the remains, the ashes, their bones, and so on, they were dumped into the empty graves, where they can be found today, and where they have been found by archaeologists. Yes. So, how did Nazis dispose of 5 to 6 million bodies? I mean, it's easy. That's the way bodies were disposed of during the Second World War, by burying them, and by burning them. Please remember that these 5 to 6 million bodies were part of a much larger mortality caused by the war. Yeah? Okay, so I don't see what the problem should be, frankly. Okay?
Did they bury those bodies in the vicinity of the camps?
In the vicinity of which camp? In the vicinity of the camps?
Yes.
Belzec, Sobibor, and Treblinka, the bodies were buried inside the camps, in very deep pits. A forensic investigation in 1945 by a Polish examining judge found that one of the pits was 7.5 meters deep. To the depth of 7.5 meters, they found ashes, bone fragments, also larger parts of human bodies, because the burning was never perfect, it was never complete. So the pits were enormously deep. They were made with excavators, mechanical excavators. Graves are now being investigated at Treblinka by archaeologists. At Sobibor, they had already been found, and at Belzec, the graves have also already been identified, or most of the graves have also already been identified. Therefore, evidence suggests that there were more graves in Belzec area. Huge mass graves, very deep ones. I've calculated the capacity of the mass graves. I see no problem. I've demonstrated that they could bury 430,000 people in the mass graves at Belzec. They need on my side. I've demonstrated that there was enough room available at Treblinka to bury 700,000 people before they started burning them. No big deal. Some work, of course. They needed excavators, but they did. But it was nothing that would have been impossible, and it was nothing that is in any way belied by the evidence. Archaeological evidence is now bringing these mass graves, is now showing the shape of these mass graves and establishing their contents.
All righty. We do have to take our 60-second top-of-the-hour break. We will come back, and Friedrich, excuse me, you will have 4 minutes to address what he just said. Be right back.